Joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Democratic Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor from the city's North Side. Commissioner, thank you so much for joining
me this
morning.
Thanks for having me. It's fun.
I know you've got some events coming up. One is as part of this continuing mentorship series that you launched at the Juvenile Temporary Detention Center, and kind of a program to show a path.
Yeah, to connect people. So the Juvenile Detention Center, for a lot of people listening, is what we used to call the Audi home. It's where kids go where they end up in trouble, but a lot of times kids end up there also because there's no one at home when they get going down the wrong path to take them back. And so they stay at the JTDC, and most of them are between probably 13 and 17. And, you know, a lot of times they feel like they've ended up here, and now their life is like taking a path and they can't recover, because to them this is the reality of what they know. And so we started about a year and a half ago bringing groups of people with all different jobs. We did a bunch of people that worked in radio. You should come next time. We did education. We did the military. Now this upcoming one, we're doing a lot of the building trades. And it's just a way to say, look, you know, I didn't have a plan. You know, everyone always thinks that anyone who's successful had a plan from birth. You want to tell these guys, look, there's so much randomness that goes into what you end up doing. And you're only 16, you're a kid. Like, you have so much more opportunity in life. You got to put that into context and make your time here focused so when you get out, you can be successful. And so we've been able to connect people to these kids at the Juvenile Detention Center, and when they get out, they stayed with them. And so it's been a really great opportunity, because it's really easy to forget that there's this building at 11th and Hamilton with 300 young people in it that are really looking for a way out to be a good citizen.
Now, I know that with budgetary concerns, the cuts in county budgets,
yes,
that there's also a factor that is affecting the Juvenile Detention Center.
It is. So one of the, when we repealed the soda tax at the county, each of the departments had to make cuts to their budget. And the part of the county, the chief judge's office that controls the Juvenile Detention Center, looked there. But in some ways, you know, they're shrinking the footprint. So if you imagine the Juvenile Detention Center, it's a big building. It's got kind of five quadrants in it, or five areas where these young people are resident, and they're closing one. But actually, it's a good news story in the sense that, you know, they started opening weekend juvenile detention, you know, court for juveniles, which meant kids don't stay over the weekend if they can actually get out of there. And they started looking differently at about who really needs to stay, you know, resident incarcerated really as a juvenile, and could you do things like electronic monitoring and probation and oversight. And so there are markedly fewer children in the Juvenile Detention Center now than there was a couple years ago, and says this allows us to consolidate and not spend the money on capital improvements and staffing an area we don't really need.
So kind of, I mean, part of what's going on statewide as well,
right,
of a reevaluation of the cost of incarceration.
Right. I mean, look, it's always a pendulum swing. We saw it with the war on drugs in this country 25 years ago, and then back to where we are now. It's got to end up somewhere in the middle. You cannot jail your way out of all the things going on in our society, drug abuse and poverty and lack of opportunity. But you got to find a middle ground. You know, some people do need to be behind bars. Some people obviously need to be arrested. They need to be rehabilitated. But probably less than had traditionally been the case.
And I think there's also, as part of this, has been this renewed look as far as juveniles and not,
right,
and not creating kind of that incarceration mentality.
You know, yeah, right. I mean, when I was, my first job out of college, you and I, we were just talking about that, I was a community organizer and I worked with young people. And so this was many, many years ago, but it was the early 90s, and it was this beginning of this idea that teenagers were really different than children, and they were different than adults. And anyone who's raising a teenager or has raised one knows that viscerally. But it's this moment where you gotta treat them differently. They're not adults, even if some of the actions that they've taken are hardcore. You gotta figure out a way to put them on a path, because someone at 17 has not mortgaged away the rest of their life, you know, because of an action. And we have to figure out a way to look at that differently. And I think that the rest of society is looking at that too.
So with these mentorship series,
yeah,
I mean, is there follow follow-up and follow-through?
There has. There's been great follow-through. So a couple, you know, 2 years ago, I spoke at the commencement for, there's a high school inside the Juvenile Detention Center, Nancy B. Jefferson High School. So I was the commencement speaker. There was a young woman there who was the valedictorian. She and I have, she's still there. It's quite serious, but she and I have since become quite close. And that's what started me on this path, which is what's going to happen when these kids get out? Most of them only stay 30 or 60 or 90 days. So we brought in a group, and it included a realtor, a great guy named Courtney Jones, who runs the Realtis, which is the African American Realtors Association. And there was this incredible rapport, and what we realized was you can't really talk to 100 kids in a big group. So we broke it down into tables. There's one adult sits with five or six kids, and they just talk about, hey, this is how I ended up in my job. This is all the things that happened with me. A bunch of the people we bought have spent time in juvenile detention in the various places that they grew up. And they said, look, I survived and I got past it, and now it's like an anecdote in my life. But look at all the things I have in front of me. So we had this whole conversation about real estate, construction, neighborhood stuff. I mean, that is, I think, one of the best paths for these young people, because there's rehab that goes on in their neighborhood. There's home buying and selling that goes on in their neighborhood. This is something everybody understands. And so Courtney has kept in touch with these kids. And so we are getting them involved in some of the real estate stuff that we do. I started the Cook County Land Bank. And so we, you know, we've encouraged them to get involved in rehab. And when we go this Thursday, we have representatives of the building trades, because there was a lot of interest among, especially the young men, but across the board of, you know, how do I become a carpenter? How do I even become an electrician? And so, you know, that's something that people perennially are interested in. And so, and the trades are really making an effort to reach out and get new people in the professions.
And I think the trades have seen somewhat of a renaissance, too.
Absolutely.
With, you know, the continued talk about vocational and skilled job training.
You know, one of the things about the trades is you graduate from high school or you finish your school, you get trained for 4 years just like you're going to college. And the thing about, I think, the lesson that the rest of the economy can learn from the unions and the trades is the training stays really close to what the job is. The reason that, you know, there's such a success in placing people outside of apprenticeships is the training absolutely reflects what the jobs are hiring for right now. And not that college doesn't do that, but we've separated those two things. You go to college, you kind of make your own decisions about what you're going to take, and then you graduate and you hope it works out. There's no real feedback loop between the job market and college unless you're in medicine or something kind of technical and, you know, accounting. And so I think, again, pendulum-wise, we went so far on the thing that everybody has to go to college and that's the way to feed the economy. You know, businesses need to get much more involved earlier into helping train, because we always talk about the skills gap, you know, but that makes it all on the person. What we really have is a training gap. And there aren't a lot of aspects of the economy, like with the labor unions, where the trainer and the employer are hand in hand. And that's how you get young people employed.
We're speaking with Bridget Gaynor. She's Cook County Commissioner, Democrat from the North Side. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Joining me here in studio is Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor. And we were talking about the juvenile mm-hmm. mentorship program, but also you've been very involved in the Cook County Land Bank.
Yes.
Could you just explain what that is?
Really quickly. So after the foreclosure crisis, lots of people ending up with vacant houses, people walking away from, you know, mortgages they couldn't afford. And you started to see vacant homes in neighborhoods that you never saw, that Chatham, Auburn, Gresham, Belmont, Cragen. And it was because they were getting stuck in court. And so we knew, I mean, look, I grew up 3 miles east of Chatham. It's a great neighborhood. I knew people wanted to buy and sell there, and they were stuck. So we just figured out a way to kind of open up the market. So we went in there, cleared the title, cleared the taxes, and then got the housing into the hands of the people who live there. And, you know, for a long time, all the benefit of housing restoration and rehab was from people who came from outside the neighborhood to do the rehab and then leave.
Right.
And, you know, our two things, when I founded the Cook County Land Bank, we had two goals. One was the work's going to be done by people in the community so the money stays there and they build their own wealth, and that the housing was going to be for homeownership, because when you have homeowners on blocks, it changes the character of the neighborhood and improves it for everybody. And so we went out of our way to recruit small developers, most of whom now are Black or Latino. We have over 200 small developers we're working with, and we help find them financing. They do housing rehab, you know, because rehabbing a single family home is actually not that complicated. It's hiring a lawyer, going to court, doing all that stuff that kind of we as the society create for these barriers put up in front of people. And so we've seen this renaissance of small developers, and we've actually had this influx of women. So, you know, actually in about 2 weeks, we're doing a lunch with this great group of African-American female developers that's come in, and what we've realized is once you get rid of the barriers of the court process and foreclosure and all of that, there's a ton of talented people out there who can redevelop housing and invest in their community. And so, you know, the land bank celebrates its fifth year. We're totally self-sustaining. We don't take any tax money. And by the end of this year, we think we'll have completed our 500th rehab. And that's 500 homes that used to be vacant that now have families living in them. So that is a game changer.
And again, these are people who've been traditionally shut out of the process.
Totally. Every single ethnic group in this country has been able to come here and get a foothold on wealth building through real estate. I mean, look, my parents owned apartment buildings. You know, my dad grew up in Roseland. He kept the first apartment that my parents lived in. And, you know, every Saturday of my life, we were going to, quote, the building, you know, cutting the grass, you know, cleaning out the hallways, doing all that stuff. And it allowed you that was part of their retirement. But when you couldn't get an FHA mortgage or you were redlined out of being able to get lending, you kind of missed that step. And that's a whole generation behind. And so we want to be a part of changing that.
So this event,
it's for female developers. I mean, you don't have a lot of women in development anyway, and so in our mind, this is a huge opportunity. And most of these women have never even been in real estate before, medical device sales, corporate jobs, but this is an opportunity to create wealth in the community.
And that's on Thursday,
May 18th. Yeah.
Okay. And that, do you know where that's at?
Yeah. Well, it's just for the developers, so it's down at the Kroc Center in Pullman. Yeah. But this Thursday will actually be out at the Juvenile Detention Center, and connecting professionals from all over the city to young people at the Juvenile Detention Center.
Well, Commissioner, I talked with Tom Bowen earlier.
Yes, I heard that. Yeah.
Things being active pretty early in the race for mayor of Chicago. And whenever potential candidates are being discussed about mayor of Chicago, your name always seems to appear. Are you going to do it?
So, look, as we've been talking for the last 20 minutes or so, to me, building up neighborhoods in Chicago is the most important thing. So I love the city. As you know, I'm a native, and now I'm raising my own kids here. And I'm always going to look for the best way to improve Chicago. I'm seriously considering running for mayor because I think that the city needs to focus on the neighborhoods. And that's the place where I spent my time and attention. So it's incredible to even think of the opportunity to do something like that. And I'm giving it a lot of thought. But thanks for asking.
Is there a time frame?
You know, we're talking to a bunch of people out in the community, and you know, this is obviously something that you want to make sure you have broad support for. So, you know, I'm continuing to do the work I'm doing, and as we're out there, we're talking to people about it. So, you know, obviously petitions come out in September, so it's got to be before then.
Does the fact that, I mean, we've seen the field already gross this early, you know, eight people at least, I think. Does the size of the field matter in that decision?
I don't think so. You know, actually, I think the size of the field makes it really interesting. You know, I met a young man who's running for mayor too, Neil Sales Griffin.
Yes.
And, you know, we had this whole conversation, and, you know, he grew up, he went to Carmel, Southsider also, grew up around Hyde Park, and his comment was, you know, so many people from my friends, my family, are leaving our neighborhood. They're going to Atlanta or, you know, Homewood Flossmoor or somewhere. And my comment to him was like, look, you should be running for mayor because you should be telling that part of the story. Everybody who puts themselves into this race brings a different perspective, and it's going to represent and engage more people. I mean, in the last election, the primary in March, you know, you have all of this activity going on. 30% of the people voted. The 3% of millennials voted between 18 and 24. I mean, it's, you know, whatever it's going to take to make someone feel like they see someone that represents what they want and what they need and what they see for the city in a race, you know, I think that that's incredibly positive, because you've got to have more participation than just 30% of the people turning out.
Well, and we've, you know, earlier in the program talked about, you know, the November midterm elections,
yeah,
and the potential of a blue wave possibility there. But also, Tom Bowen was saying, too, that this is, I guess, I said a change election, and he said an anger election.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, anger doesn't necessarily always translate into motivation to vote.
I totally agree. You know, I mean, look, I started my career as an organizer. I was lucky. I was trained by a group of nuns, and I kind of did this, I don't know, Catholic Peace Corps, Jesuit Volunteer Corps. And you know what? The thing I learned from them was, this, nothing happens overnight. Everything is about turnout and work and being methodical and getting out there. And just because people are angry on Facebook doesn't mean they're going to show up to the voting booths. And I think part of the job of anybody who not just cares about the future of Chicago but is involved in politics is to get people over just, you know, yelling about things and showing up, because that's the hard part.
Giving people a reason to vote.
Giving people a reason to vote and reminding them that, you know, you can yell at your Facebook all you want. That's not going to change anything. I mean, I always think that line, you know, the revolution will not be televised. It will certainly also not be on Facebook. And so, you know, if you really want a revolution, you got to show up and make it yourself.
That's Bridget Gaynor, Cook County Commissioner, Democrat from the North Side. Commissioner, thank you so much for joining
me
this morning.
Fun.